Afternoon, Saskatchewan. Jamie and Locker with you on the Green Zone. We're both going through it today after the Vegas Golden Knights took game one.
Oh, just that organized, that team is maddening.
But they're pretty good at hockey either way. Of course, Drew Remenda is going to be here to break down game one, and we'll see if he declares it over. It's over. Is it just, should we just all
that is watching? Not the case.
Vegas Golden Knights are going to win the Stanley Cup.
That's you.
That is me. I'm ready for it now. I'm actually tonight on the way home, I'm going to the liquor store. I'm getting Wheels' beer and I'm doing that.
Actually, I like that idea.
Because you know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Go buy what you owe him and what you would owe him if Vegas won.
You know, I can't drink it, so if Vegas doesn't win, you might get some beers.
I wasn't thinking that, but now this even seems like a better idea.
Because sharing is caring. Well, we begin with game one last night. Golden Knights start the Stanley Cup final victorious.
Hurdle for Sissons. Back to Hurdle. Scores! It's Tomas Hurdle with the go-ahead goal. 3:24 to go.
And they would hold on. Mitch Marner got in the way of what could have been the tying goal with seconds left. The Golden Knights 5, the Hurricanes 4. Vegas leads the series 1-0. So game two tomorrow night, start time, same time, 6:00. I thought things were going so well at the start of that game when Nick Ehler scored two goals in his first two shots and it was 2-0 Carolina. But then there they came back. And everybody's focused on that. John Tortorella waited for the TV timeout.
Yeah.
And then used that, rallied the troops. They scored like a minute later and then they gained momentum. And kept on rolling, so 5-4.
Well, you know what? I'd give Hurricane the first period. You give Vegas the second period. And then the third period was neither one of those teams, in my opinion, dominated. So I still think there's lots of hockey left to play.
I want six more of those games.
I would agree with you, yes. Okay, we'll stick with the NHL. The Leafs are interviewing Patrick Waugh for the head coaching job.
Toronto, I've heard they've done like 15 Zoom interviews. I think Peter Laviolette was one of them. Working on some others. Laviolette is one I know they did by Zoom, I heard.
So Laviolette by Zoom, but the rumors are Patrick was also in the mix.
Well, and I heard 50 when I was listening to that this morning. I came into Green Zone Lounge this morning.
When you said 50, I was like, I'm looking this up. That cannot be true. That's not true.
I saw the number 50.
Oh, 15. 15. 15
is still ridiculous. Okay. Anyway, Laviolette makes more sense than Wah. Do they wait, though? Does Chaco, like, here's the thing, he's going to do something
for torts?
Weird. Do they wait for torts?
That's our question today, ladies and gentlemen.
I think it's
Should
a great
teams
question.
Be waiting for John Tortorella?
Because I would. If I'm really? The Oilers, I'm waiting for him.
I think John is perfect at what he is doing right here, right now. For those teams, I don't know.
No, but you can't think logically here. This is the Leafs. You have to think about what makes no sense.
Okay.
Okay.
Maybe. We'll see how that shakes out.
Torts makes no sense. I also want it to happen for the Oilers on some level. I don't know why.
Meanwhile, last night it was the CFL's top 50 list.
Absolutely on the money from Nathan Rourke once again is now the Calgary Stampeders. Defense gives chase, but they can't catch Rourke as he cuts back inside the 5. Touchdown, Nathan Rourke.
Here's Bowley by Mitchell. Taking his deep shot for Brendan O'Leary Orange. He is not robbed this time.
Yes, number one, Nathan Rourke. Number two, Bo Levi Mitchell. His favorite target, Kenny Lawler, was number three. The top defensive player on the list at number four is Matthew Betts. And Keon Hatcher, who wasn't even on the list last year, ranks number five. If you're wondering about where the Riders are, number eight is Trevor Harris. Number 10 is Jermarcus Hardrick. In total, nine Rough Riders are in the top 50. 12 from last year's Grey Cup team is A.J. Allen, C.J. Revis, and Malik Kearney, who all left in the offseason. Also on the CFL's top 50 list.
We got game one of the NBA Finals tonight in San Antonio.
22. And there it is!
Oh! Step back three.
Brunson the drive, left-handed off the glass. What a shot from Jalen Brunson.
So a 6:30 start. The last time the Knicks were in the final was 1999. The last time they won a championship, it was 1973. So Jamie has said this more than a couple of times. The Knicks are kind of like the Leafs of the NBA. The Knicks have won 11 straight games in the playoffs this year leading up to game one tonight, including a sweep of the Cavs and the 76ers. Will be paying attention to Wemby, 22 years of age, third year in the league. He seems to be dominating this playoffs, and this is his first playoff run. So he is a future star, future Hall of Famer. He is fun to watch. The Spurs had had what might end up being the final already against OKC.
That's what I thought watching that final. Yeah. I'm like, seven. Knicks have been resting, but in basketball, there's a rhythm to it. And if you're not, I'm going to Spurs in the NBA final. Quick update on tennis. Felix Auger-Aliassime is out in the quarters.
There it is. Fabio Caboli to the semifinals at Roland Garros. A dream come true for the 24-year-old Italian.
Yeah, the young Italian beats the young Canadian, Felix Auger-Aliassime. The final was 4-6, 6-4, 6-4, 6-4. The furthest out Auger-Aliassime has gone to the French Open, made Canadian history as the first guy to ever make a quarter in every Grand Slam in a career. Meanwhile, there's a Canadian doing very well. Gabriela Dabrowski is back at it again with her mixed partner, Evan King. They're into the final of the French Open with a 7-5, 6-7, 10-5 victory. And Gabriela Dabrowski's playing more tennis with her women's partner, has semifinal action. So Gabby might make both finals in mixed and women's doubles at the French Open.
Gabriel, Gatorade, get the electrolytes up.
Well, you're giving health advice.
Yes.
Oh, that's what's happening right now.
I'm not a doctor. I just play one on the radio.
Coming up next, what did you think of the CFL top 50 list? Any surprises? My list was a little different. I'll just say that. It was a little different from the CFL top 50 list, and some surprises next on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Jamie and Locker with you here on the Green Zone on a Wednesday afternoon. Coming up, Dave Naylor's going to give us a West Division preview in the Canadian Football League. That's at 4:05 this afternoon. Tomorrow, he'll talk about the East Division. We're also going to continue our CFL tour. We're going to take a stop in Toronto later on this hour as we'll take a look at Chad Kelly. How's it going to look?
Yeah,
for Chad Kelly.
It's an interesting team to look at just based on what they did last year. But the return of Chad Kelly, but also a complete rehaul on the coaching side of things. Like, it's, I don't know. Are they calling it a rebuild? Or are they doing what all Toronto sports organizations do and they go, oh, we're just tinkering?
It's a,
they should be rebuilding.
They're reloading.
Okay.
It's a reload. Right. Not a rebuild. It's a reload.
Yeah.
Good luck to them. I'm doubtful on this Toronto team. It's the unknown of the coaching staff and the new head coach, and it's the unknown of Chad Kelly and an unknown on some of the talent. But, of course, last night was the CFL preview shows, which included the CFL's top 50 list, which is always debated. Nathan Rourke went number one, which we talked about. Bo Levi Mitchell went number two. Kenny Lawler, three. Matthew Betts, four. Keon Hatcher, five.
Okay, so where...
I have my ballot in front of me.
Yeah,
right,
I was just going to say, how many of the top five did you nail outside of Nathan Rourke? Because you don't really
None
get Nathan
them.
Rourke. Okay.
Well, out of my top five...
But you had Kenny at two.
Four of my top five are in the top five, and Matthew Betts was my number six. So actually... Out of my top six.
Well, that's really good then.
All of them are in the top seven. Brady Oliveira is the only one in my top six who's out of the top six. He was seventh. I had him third.
Where'd you put Beverett?
Beverett was 18th on my list.
Okay. I was
like the
say,
fact
that's...
Roland Milligan fell to 14 is baffling to me. Roland Milligan beat Tyrese Beverett for Defensive Player of the Year 2 years ago. And Roland Milligan was just as good. Last year didn't have the numbers he had,
okay.
But I thought he was pretty darn good.
Where did you have Milligan?
Milligan at eight. I had Milligan at eight.
Where'd you have Davis Alexander?
Davis Alexander I had at 19.
And did you have Hardrick in the top 10?
I had him 12th. So close.
Oh, so that's really close. So your list is pretty comparable, no?
There are the, like, Davis Alexander, right?
Yeah, Beth's
here's my
close.
Thing on Davis Patrick Alexander. Close. There are people that believe, people voted for him number one.
I had
and
number,
people have
number two.
Him at number two.
Yeah.
Now, some people do projection list, right? How do you project this player to be in 2026? Others, I am more of the, what have you proven before I put you anywhere? Close to the top three. And Davis Alexander's 11-0 as a starter in the regular season. Okay, he had three wins the year.
That
he
got
had
me.
Eight last year.
That got me.
But he beat Ottawa three times. He beat Edmonton twice. No, Toronto twice, Edmonton once. Six of his eight starts last year were against non-playoff teams. And I know he's good. He threw for 10 touchdowns, all that. He's good. But is he better than Trevor Harris? He's not.
He's flashier.
He's not better than Trevor Harris. Okay. Is he better than Vernon Adams Jr.?
Ooh.
I wouldn't put him there yet. So I had Vernon Adams Jr. higher on my list.
Okay.
The biggest issue I had.
Case
there's
you
one,
made that Vernon Adams Jr. is a bit flashy too.
Yes, but he started way more games and has way more success. Than what we've seen.
That perfect record in the regular season, though, regardless
projecting, I would project Davis Alexander to be a top five player in the Canadian Football League. So those who like project that way, okay. I'm with you.
Okay.
I can see that.
Okay.
But what he has proven, what he has done, I'm not putting him in front of Harris. I can't do it. He beat him in the Grey Cup.
I actually felt bad for putting Harris a little lower down. And I'm surprised.
I had Harris at 11, by the way. He finished 8th.
I thought he might show up in the top 5.
And then most of the riders I had similar to where they were for the most part on who's on this list.
What about the riders that left the team, the three that are on the top 50 that are no longer with the riders? Are you close?
Yep.
Okay.
I think CJ Revis might be exactly where I put him on the list as well. Malik Carney's
really strong.
Really close. The one guy I thought got snubbed who's not on the list, who I had 22, is running back Greg Bell of the Ottawa Redblacks. He is not on the list, and I think that's a shame. He had 1,500 total yards last year of offense, catching the ball, running the ball for the Hamilton
Tiger-Cats.
So
why is he not on the list?
I don't... Because you have limited guys, and he would have been, I think, the sixth running back.
Okay.
But he was my fifth running back. I had A.J. Ladd behind him. But A.J.'s on the list. I had him on the list. I just had Greg Bell ranked higher. So
where did A.J. end up?
On my list, he was, I forget where between pages. But A.J. Ouellette was... 40-something?
Yeah, he was down at...
37.
I was surprised...
And I had him 34, so when I was right there with A.J. Ouellette.
I was surprised he was that far down, if I'm being honest. But that might be just me with a little bit of rider bias.
Next year, I think Nathan Rourke will probably still be number one. Davis Alexander might be right back up there. And I think Justin Rankin, who I had seventh, he was actually 15th on the list.
What do you do with Harris if he goes and wins another Grey Cup this year?
The thing is, he's not flashy. People love flashy. But he's a top 10 player. Yeah. He's a top 10 player in the Canadian Football League going into the 2026 season. Damian Locker with the Year in the Green Zone on this Wednesday afternoon. A little bit of a rainy, dreary kind of day around some portions of the province. And then it looks like it might be picking up again this weekend into the mid-20s, high 20 degrees with some sunny skies for the weekend. Looking pretty good. Damian Locker with you here on the Green Zone. So John Tortorella has the Vegas Golden Knights three wins away from a Stanley Cup. Do you hire him as a coach or not?
I got to be careful because I actually really want him just because of the chaos factor, right? I would love to see him. Why do I want him in Edmonton? I want him in Toronto coaching the Leafs, Jamie and I, because it's the Leafs, and that kind of madness just appeals to me. But I also think they should throw him into the mix with Bruce Cassidy in Edmonton for the Oilers.
Maybe they could coach together. No?
Oh, man. That's actually the worst idea I've heard all day. The two of them they'd kill each other. There's no way that would work out properly.
No, I'd be fine. I love chaos.
No, I know you do, but I'm just saying I don't think. Anyway, I think it would be a real problem, the two of them. But
it's going to be interesting what happens.
Does
after
Vegas
this cup
keep
final.
Them?
I don't know what's going to happen with John Tortorella.
The rumor is their coach from the affiliate, AHL affiliate, is going to, and he's already been told.
Let's throw this question at David. David's going to join us. David Marasuti, right, CFL for Sportsnet, also co-host of Locked On Leafs as well. Joining us from Toronto. David, we're having a quick chat about what happens with John Tortorella after the Stanley Cup final. Do you think at all Toronto waits to bring in Torts as their head coach?
Oh, I can only imagine what that would be like if John Tortorella would join. I would just have popcorn for every single press conference if that happens.
So you're not against it, are you? Like, I think it would be amazing, David.
I wouldn't totally be against it, honestly. Like, if you're talking about this a team that needs a culture shock and a coach that would bring it, John Tortorella would definitely bring it, especially with what he's done for Vegas.
Oh, short duration, but forward to. It would be interesting. Or the Oilers, or maybe they just bring him back to Vegas. But David Marasuti's joining us. He is writing for Sportsnet for the Canadian Football League, also doing a little World Cup work ahead of next week's action in Toronto. But let's dig into the Argos, David. What do you actually expect from this team with a little bit of an unknown head coach, career assistant, and a quarterback we haven't seen play in about 18 months?
Yeah, I mean, the uncertainty is definitely the theme right now. And don't forget that this team is also away from its usual surroundings. Now they're based in Guelph, just outside, about 45 minutes outside of Toronto, because the World Cup has taken over their headquarters. So it's been a big adjustment. And this reminds me a lot like when Ryan Dinwiddie took over as head coach. Because when Ryan Dinwiddie took over as head coach, there were the same similar things being said about Ryan Dinwiddie, right? Career assistant, never was a head coach, especially at the CFL level. Now, with Mike Miller, he's got to get Chad Kelly to look like the quarterback he was in 2023, which is not going to be an easy feat, considering a lot of people are still a bit hesitant. You know, talking with people I know, the leg is going to be something that's going to be talked about a long time with Chad Kelly. can it hold up for a full season? Because right now, by all accounts, from what I've been talking with Coach Miller, the leg seems good. There's no concerns. Otherwise, he wouldn't be getting the full reps at practice that he's getting. But you do have to have that. That's always going to be a theme. That's always going to be a concern. And, yeah, you mentioned it, 18 months off. You know, in training camp, it wasn't the most crisp Chad Kelly at times, but I think Kelly, that's to be expected. He's put a lot of pressure on himself to get back to that form. So you do wonder, does that play into the mindset of him maybe trying to do too much at times? And I think the Argos are going to really try to help him with that. But I do think that I'm expecting things to start slow, because I do think they're going to want to ease him into things. They don't want to throw too much at him considering the amount of time he's been off.
So, David, we've had a rather involved conversation around the CFL's top 50 that came out last night, not only yesterday but also today. And Chad Kelly lands in number 24 on the list without having played at all last year. Are you surprised that he made the list or no?
I'm not surprised, because even just based off reputation, I can see a reason to include him. I don't totally disagree with where he's being placed either, because, like, again, I haven't seen him playing for so long, so you can't have him any higher. I'm sure there could have been justifications for having him, you know, go lower in the ranking too, just because he hasn't played in so long. But yeah, I can understand people who are hesitant to even name him there because he hasn't played in so long. But while the leg is one thing, I think the talent, the decision making of Chad Kelly, what makes Chad Kelly Chad Kelly, still I think warrants him to be in the conversation among the top 50.
David Marasciutti joining us. He writes for CFL on Sportsnet. And we're looking at the Toronto Argonauts as we continue our tour around the Canadian Football League ahead of tomorrow's opener. Of course, the Argos are on a bye week, as are the Riders and the BC Lions. You talked about the displacement, David, for the Argonauts. How difficult is that going to be to hang out in Guelph rather than, you know, I know they can travel to Toronto. Downtown Toronto is not too far away, but the lifestyle might be a little bit different than what those career Argos are used to.
Or do they care?
Or maybe they don't care.
It is something, yeah. I mean, for some of the players, they're not, you know, they're okay with having the low-key lifestyle. In Guelph, there's certain, you know, players that would love to be able to go out. But, yeah, Guelph isn't, I mean, too far away. They can do those things that they want to. My thing is that when you go on road trips, coming back home gives you a chance to decompress. And the team has done its best to try to put the players in situations where they can have it. They're not just going to all be in hotels. I know some have done, like, you know, rentals of, like, houses, so that when they come back from these road trips, they at least feel like they have a home base, right, to go back to. They're not just going hotel to hotel to hotel. And that can be tough, you know, a tough life for players in that regard. And the facilities at Guelph are great. In some ways, I think it actually benefits the team more, because their setup in Toronto is not very great. They have to bus players to practice because the locker rooms are at BMO Field. They bus a majority of the team. It's not a far bus ride. It's just, I don't think you're going to ask offensive linemen to go, you know, about a 10-15 minute walk to the practice field. So this situation kind of benefits them, where they don't have to deal with those logistics, and the team, you know, the staff will at least have a bit of ease in terms of how that's all set up. But yeah, I mean, some of them like the idea of it's like going back to college. Some of the older players, I'm sure they're like, well, I've done the college life. This is the pros now. But they're making the best of it. I think it's going to help bring the group together. A lot of them have told me, like, they see this as a way to keep things together, but there's always going to be challenges, because you're going to be dealing with, you know, constant back and forth and adjustments on the fly, because, you know, this is a totally new situation for a lot of people.
David, one of the more popular individuals in Saskatchewan as a whole is the CFL schedule maker. That was a bit of a joke. Sorry. How annoyed are the fans in Ontario with this World Cup disruption? Is this, listen, you just talked about the players. Now, are the fans really, like, is this something that they're sort of hyper-focused on right now?
Yeah, there's definitely a group of fans that, you know, they're not thrilled about this. They were not thrilled about it the moment that it was announced with, you know, everything happening. I can totally get the frustration. You know, you're waiting so long to watch your team play. Again, though, I've even told some of these fans have been through this before when Toronto was hosting, I believe it was the Pan Am Games about 11 years ago in Toronto, and the Argos were once again displaced because Rogers Centre was being used, and they couldn't play their games out of there. They did games in Hamilton. They went all over the place. So, but I think for a lot of people, they just felt like, you know, to not have the team around for so long, it's going to feel weird. But fans are finding ways to, you know, still find ways. They'll try to go to Guelph for practices if they can. It is going to be tough. But I think even everywhere in Toronto, you ask any fans or even sports fans, like, this World Cup situation is taking another mind of its own in terms of how it's impacted people's mentality of, oh, I want nothing to do with the area, you know, where the games are being played. It's going to make things really difficult for, in a city that's already crowded and dealing with congestion all the time. So, yeah.
Are they done construction on the Gardner Expressway yet?
they fast-tracked, and I believe that the city also put a halt on construction because, yeah, that's the only reason why there's traffic in Toronto, because of construction. But I know, like, the planning of planning has been top notch here in Toronto in a lot of ways.
Oh, we'd like to have a meeting with our city planners in Saskatoon and Regina sometimes on their construction. But final question for you, David, as we put a wrap on the Toronto Argonauts, and what do you think is going to happen? They are my biggest question mark. I think they'll finish at the bottom of the East. But if Chad Kelly is anything like he was a few years ago, who the heck knows? But, David, what's your gut say on the Argos?
I'm maybe cautiously optimistic that they can at least be a little more competitive and maybe be third in the division. Ottawa is going to be better. We already know that. We already know what Ryan Dinwiddie is capable of doing. I do think, yeah, the Argos have brought in a lot of players back to help bring back some of that old identity from the last few years that saw them be a more competitive team in the East. But yeah, I mean, they have Nick Arbuckle as the safety net if Chad Kelly's health becomes a concern. So I think offensively, I think the team's going to be fine. The defense, that's going to be the biggest question mark. They have a lot of question marks on the defense as if they can get back to even being a competitive defense, because they were not a competitive defense last year. And, you know, Mike Miller, he seems to be very level-headed. He seems to be embracing the challenge. But, you know, it's a new situation for him. And there's going to be a lot of eyes on him. There's going to be a lot of pressure to guide this team through a tough start, you know, a lot of road games at the start. So, yeah, I think it wouldn't surprise me if they're, you know, in the bottom of the division, just because it's a very tough division. Ottawa's hoping to be better. But I do think the Argos, they have enough players there to at least be competitive, at least make these games tough.
Well, David, thank you so much for your time. I look forward to the writing this year again on Sportsnet.
Thank you, guys.
That is David Marisuti joining us out of Toronto, writing CFL for Sportsnet.ca. Coming up next, this day in sports. This was one of those days where I go through our archive audio and I literally went, oh yeah, I forgot about this. We're going to take you back to the 93 Stanley Cup final. Game two was on. Do you remember what happened in game two? Stanley Cup final, LA, Montreal. An interesting moment and an amazing coaching decision next on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
Which Bob remembers.
The Saskatchewan Roughriders are Grey Cup champions.
Who's Buck
I'll be back in town.
On this day in sports history, it was Game 2, 1993, Stanley Cup Final. The Kings up 1-0. They're up by 1 goal late in the game. And Guy Carboneau was on this show, and we asked him, did you guys know? Did you have a spy? L.A. says you had a spy. Look at all the sticks of the L.A. Kings. He denied it. He just said he looked down in the draw and went, that's an illegal curve. So, yes, Game 2 ended in drama.
A stick measurement has been called. It's the stick of Marty McSorley.
If he uses an illegal stick, which he did, and there's no excuse.
Desjardins, no shot on the outside. Desjardins shot. Score! They have tied it. Brunet carries in, rolling in front of them, and it is shot. Desjardins following the play, and he missed in the short side. There he is again. Scores! Desjardins! And the Canadiens win in overtime, his third goal of the game.
Yes, Desjardins completes a hat trick. Marty, why is Marty McSorley have an illegal curve? Out of all the people on the LA Kings, Robitaille, Gretzky,
you could have given him a shovel for all that it mattered.
But hey, it was 2 minutes left in the game. Let's check out that stick. Power play goal ties it up. That series went 1-1. Of course, the Habs would win it in five.